Lots of news is happening all around the world and right here at home. So let's find out what's trending.
What's trending? Let's get political.
So Judge Amy Coney Barrett sat through a long, grueling day of questions coming from senators. There were some easy softballs coming from the right and some disingenuous questions coming from the left. Both sides are doing something very intentionally. On the right, they're trying to make sure the public understands that Amy Coney Barrett was not picked because she gave any specific promises to the Trump administration or to any Republican for their vote in order to get this nomination. On the left, the senators are pushing a line that she very clearly did, that the only reason that she was picked was because the president said he wanted someone who would overturn either Obamacare or abortion, which, by the way, presidents on either side of the aisle constantly put out statements during their tenures that they're looking for very specific kinds of justices. Now, usually the focus is on their temperament, their judicial philosophy. And the best way to talk about the judicial philosophy of Amy Coney Barrett is to compare her to the justice that she served under, Antonin Scalia. And she has said multiple times, both today, during her opening statement yesterday, she has given interviews and written articles and saying, yeah, you know what? My general philosophy as an originalist follows what Antonin Scalia did, which means sometimes you're going to have to say yes to laws you don't like but are very clearly constitutional, and you get to say no to laws that you do like that are unconstitutional. That's just how it goes. But of course, during this process, she's not going to specifically say how she is going to vote on very specific cases and very specific topics. That's not what you're supposed to do. In fact, the quote-unquote stonewalling in not responding to very specific and direct questions about issues that are going to come up in front of the court, the reason why we don't do that is because it shows you are not impartial, which you need to be. In fact, back in 1993, when then Judge Ruth Bader Ginsburg was up for a confirmation, she made a statement that now is referred to as the Ginsburg Rule.
Judges in our system are bound to decide concrete cases, not abstract issues. Each case comes to court based on particular facts, and its decision should turn on those facts and the governing law stated and explained in light of the particular arguments the parties or their representatives present. A judge sworn to decide impartially can offer no forecasts, no hints, for that would show not only disregard for the specifics of the particular case, it would display disdain for the entire judicial process.
This is very clear and uncontroversial. In fact, when then nominee Elena Kagan was asked on specific questions, she said she's not going to give a grade or a thumbs up or thumbs down on very specific cases and issues that are either certain to or likely to come up in front of her if she were to get the seat on the court. Now, Democrats are hoping you don't realize that. Some folks in the media are hoping you guys don't realize that, because then it makes it very, very easy to pretend that Amy Coney Barrett is simply choosing to hide her real view on topics like abortion, which came up early on when Senator Dianne Feinstein, the Democrat from California, pressed her on it.
Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe was wrongly decided?
So, Senator, I do want to be forthright and answer every question so far as I can. I think on that question, I'm going to invoke Justice Kagan's description, which I think is perfectly put. When she was in her confirmation hearing, she said that she was not going to grade precedent or give it a thumbs up or a thumbs down. And I think in an area where precedent continues to be pressed and litigated, as is true of Casey, it would be particularly, it would actually be wrong and a violation of the canons for me to do that as a sitting judge. So if I express a view on a precedent one way or another, whether I say I love it or I hate it, it signals to litigants that I might tilt one way or another in a pending case.
Now, of course, that is a very reasonable response, and yet the senator just persisted.
It's distressing not to get a straight answer.
It's not distressing. It wasn't distressing when Republicans asked questions of Elena Kagan or Sotomayor, or literally any Democratic appointee. It's not distressing. That's how it works. It wasn't distressing when Ginsburg did it.
So let me try again. Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe was wrongly decided?
She doesn't even change the question. She doesn't even try to rephrase it. Having just heard from Amy Coney Barrett why she wasn't going to answer that particular question.
Senator, I completely understand why you are asking the question, but again, I can't pre-commit or say, yes, I'm going in with some agenda, because I'm not. I don't have any agenda. I have no agenda to try to overrule Casey. I have an agenda to stick to the rule of law and decide cases as they come.
Now, the Democrats are saying it would be outrageous if a judge made a promise to a president or anyone on their same side, a senator who's on politically, at least perceived to be on the same side, of how they would rule on a case. And yet, they are now asking her to do exactly that. Not once, not twice.
Do you agree with Justice Scalia's view that Roe can and should overturned by the Supreme Court?
The same question.
Well, I think my answer is the same because, that's a case that's litigated. It could, its contours could come up again. In fact, do come up. They came up last term before the court. So I think, what the Casey standard is, and it's a contentious issue, which is, I know, one reason why it would be comforting to you to have an answer. But I can't express views on cases or pre-commit to approaching a case any particular way.
This was a good performance, including when Senator Amy Klobuchar just went after her.
I believe, and I think the American people have to understand, that you would be the polar opposite of Justice Ginsburg. She and Justice Scalia were friends, yes, but she never embraced his legal philosophy.
Good! I want her to embrace the Scalia philosophy. This whole idea that this particular seat has to be a seat held by a liberal trailblazer shows you how little respect some folks on the left have for this court. I've heard many, many times, not just today, but over the course of the last few weeks, that this is Ginsburg's seat. No, it's not. No, it's not. It's the American people's seat. It wasn't Scalia's seat. It's not Clarence Thomas's seat. It's the seat of the American people in a system that allows for different justices coming from different judicial backgrounds and philosophies to sit on the court. But I will say this, when you tell folks that Amy Coney Barrett is going to be the opposite of Ruth Bader Ginsburg, awesome. You've just got a whole bunch of Republicans really excited. Because when we look at what Ruth Bader Ginsburg did, as much as she was a brilliant person, they're a brilliant jurist, there's no doubt about that, and she was clearly passionate, she was political. She was political. Overtly political. And you can tell that from her dying wish of not filling the seat. Because she didn't want Donald Trump to fill the seat. That is political. And that's not actually what we should expect, including on the right, from our justices. This was another really big win, not just for President Trump, because he's the one who nominated her, but for the nominee herself. Even on CNN, they were praising her.
If we could roll back even further, and this were another Republican president in another age, I've been in Washington long enough, Judge Amy Coney Barrett would be getting 70 votes or more in the United States Senate because of her qualifications.
And that no question comment came from Dana Bash, who went on to also talk about how impressive Coney Barrett was today and will continue to be tomorrow. You're listening to the Jason Rant Show. When we come back, we have an update in the saga of the Asian giant murder hornets here in Washington State.
Say Asian?
The giant murder hornet.
Thank you.
Find me on Twitter, twitter.com/JasonRants. Let's find out what else is trending.
What's trending at home?
So another Asian giant murder hornet was caught in Washington.
You did it again. You said Asian, and I'm an Asian producer. So, you know, let's call it something else. It's called the murder hornet. The Caucasian murder.
Fair,
what if it's the Caucasian murder hornet?
You have made the point that a stereotype of Asians are that they're small, right?
When did I make that?
Many times. And you've pointed out you yourself are short many times.
I am short.
With a little bit of an attitude. This says giant.
So I should be loving this, that it's an Asian giant.
Giant.
Godzilla was a giant, and, you know, my culture didn't take too well to him.
Well, he wasn't Asian. Godzilla wasn't Asian.
Do you know that? Did you ask him?
Well, it's not a human being. It's a beast.
You're assuming culture.
Fine. The giant murder hornet that's from Asia, but now is in Washington State, was caught. And yet again, we've got a failure in their attempt to put a tracker on this thing. So the Washington State Department of Agriculture is trying to put the tracker on the giant murder hornet from Asia that's now in Washington.
It's the Washington giant murder hornet now.
Of Asia. They're trying to put this little tracker on it so that they can trace it as it goes back to its giant murder hornet family, so they can, in an early morning raid, just completely kill them all. Except they've been running into some problems. The last time they tried to do this, they used glue to put the tracker on the giant Asian murder hornet. Except it prohibited the giant murder Asian hornet from Washington, from Asia, in Washington. It prevented it from actually flying. So I guess they just killed it. So I don't know what they ended up doing. Throw it in the trash bin. So this time, the entomologists use dental floss to tie it onto the bee. I could have told you that probably would not work, having never spent any time with entomologists. Probably can't spell it if I were to tweet it. And really don't even understand it. I would have said, probably not going to work out.
The plans these entomologists are making are literally sixth graders level type of plans. Like, hey, let's put a string on a bee.
It's just okay. Except it didn't work. As soon as the bee flew away, it fell right off. And they're not able now to find the bee. Which means, not only do they not know where the giant murder hornet actually is, the giant murder hornet is now telling all of its giant murder hornet friends and family and community that there is a war coming between the giant murder hornets and humans, which means they're not going to react well, and perhaps they proactively strike us.
This is going to make for a good movie plot one day.
100%. In fact, I seem to remember that in Godzilla, wasn't there a literal giant Asian murder hornet? Or was that a butterfly? I don't remember.
I don't remember. The one from like 1994?
No, there was one I just saw last year. It was one of the worst movies I've seen.
Oh, I didn't go and watch that.
Sven Svizzer is the department's entomologist. He tries describing the technology to Komo T. What do you mean he tries? I'm sure that he he does a good, that's a passive aggressive way to talk about this. I think he's going to do a phenomenal job.
Frankly, I was extremely impressed.
Nope.
But I can't. It's cutting out.
How well Ben Scherzer
the technology work.
He's doing a great job.
Worked for
it, but
for us. We
you
were
didn't
able
do
to
that?
Resting locations.
I did not do this.
And just.
Is his Wi-Fi not working?
I'm going to assume the guy who's working with technology to put tracking devices on bees isn't having the best Wi-Fi right now.
They didn't, like, do a quick speed test on their Wi-Fi before jumping on the interview with Como TV?
Doesn't seem like it. Just seems like they kind of, you know, threw the dart at
the
board.
Well, maybe it goes away.
Again.
No, it's not going away.
We now have a basic idea of what direction.
I think I now know why they're not able to track these giant murder hornets.
Why is that?
They can't even figure out the Wi-Fi, but we expect them to figure out how to track
a brand new species.
Bee? A hornet? Finally, he got back on a better Wi-Fi, called Como back, and explained what happened in this failed experiment to track down the stupid bee.
We then broke up and started searching the area where she was last seen, but were unable to locate the signal again. We regrouped after a little while, drew up some more search grids, and did searches again for the rest of the afternoon, and unfortunately we're not able to get a hold of the signal again. However, we did get an initial direction of the flight. We were able to meet.
Yeah, what if it was a misdirection? What if it meant to throw you off their scent? Oh, we got the direction that it's going in. Uh-huh. Uh-huh. By the way, it's Mothra, according to multiple people who texted in, which I'm assuming Mothra means it's a moth. Right?
I mean, that sounds right. The root is there.
Yeah. Because Godzilla is a god.
No.
Of Zilla. No?
It's just a lizard.
But wasn't it supposed to be like a god of the lizard?
Walks on like two
legs.
I didn't,
if I'm being honest, I didn't understand any of the movies.
Who was the star in that movie? The movie was bad.
I don't remember. It's what the girl from Stranger Things was in it, and she was awful. Everything about the movie was awful.
I'm thinking of the 1994 one.
I know. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, Georgina Ferris is going to stop by. She wants you to get on board the Initiative 1109 train. She makes the case when we come back. Jason Rand Show on AM 770 KTTH and 94.5 FM on the Greater East Side. It's not just important for you to vote no on R90, which would kill the inappropriate sex education curriculum from actually being taught in public schools. It's important to say yes to Initiative 1109, which is the offense to the sex ed nonsense. Joining me on the line is the sponsor of 1109, as she is trying to get enough signatures to get this on the next ballot, Georgine Ferris. Georgine, welcome to the show.
Hi, Jason, and thank you for having me on your show. I'd like to say congratulations to you for being on National Fox News and representing the Pacific Northwest. Good job.
Thank you. I appreciate that. It's because everything is so crazy.
And you also have the best hair in National News.
Oh, you're just now sucking up the perfect way. So let's talk about 1109 and how it's separate from R90, but also, while technically separate, they're also kind of intertwined if you care about R90.
Yes. So it's a 1-2 punch. Referendums are defense and initiatives are offense. So we have a 1-2 punch here. Step one, reject R90 on your ballot. Reject it. A lot of people are confused about that, mm-hmm. and they think it's one and done. Oh, no, it's not. Reject R90 on your ballot, and that's defense. Step two is sign Initiative 1109. That's offense. Offense, because a referendum rolls back the law, right? And it'll roll back to what it was the day they voted on it, which is still the government saying there are standards that OSPI is going to require of school districts. So Initiative 1109 completely gets rid of the comprehensive sex ed graphic sex ed, and it will bypass the hearings if we get a Republican majority in mm-hmm. November. It speeds up the process. They can just vote on it without a hearing. So here's an example. If sex ed is a pandemic, then Referendum 90 stops the spreading of the disease. It does not stop the disease. The disease is still there. Initiative 1109 stops the disease. It takes away the disease. So it's a game changer because it puts health decisions in the hands of parents.
Well, and that's so a big part of 1109, and it's trying to explain exactly what it does. Essentially, it would remove the state mandates and the state standards on curriculum and make sex education a local issue, so the local school boards are presumably working with, you know, parents in the community in coming up with appropriate sex education curriculum for their schools.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. It restores parental rights and brings it back to local control. It's engaging parents to restore their own parental rights, and it brings decision-making to the local school district and parents. It's local control, not the state mandating. So we think that's really important. There's three core issues. Remove the state, have an opt-in program, and fit the values of your community. Because not all communities are mm-hmm. the same, you know?
Yeah, that's true. Can we talk about that one point at a little bit more length here? Because here I think is a reasonable pushback on that one point of taking away just a standard. Because, you know, when you look at the data, either statewide or nationwide, when we're talking about sex ed curriculum, there is a general consensus that age-appropriate sex education isn't just important, it's necessary. There could be a community that says otherwise, that they don't want any sex ed at all. And so what is your pushback to that, where, generally speaking, the public understands that there is some point to the sex education as far as the, you know, the well-being of a kid who would be learning just some basic information?
We're not opposed to sex ed. That's why Initiative 1109 is called Common Sense Sex Education.
But couldn't 1109 get rid of it completely if let's say if it goes completely down to the local level and there's no mandate whatsoever, couldn't then just a group of parents get together and say to the school board, we don't want any of this whatsoever, and then them win that argument?
No, because I believe that's again, what we want to say is common sense sex ed that teaches physiology, you know, the birds mm-hmm. and the bees, what's going to happen to your body. But we just don't want to include things that are too
crazy stuff.
Graphic or inappropriate for younger kids, for the tender aged, you know.
Yeah.
So we don't want the inappropriate, what we're saying, for under fifth grade, for K to four. So our new law has optimal health mm-hmm. risk and risk avoidance and primary prevention. The focus is to have healthy outcomes. So it's going to focus on those kinds of things. It's still sex ed. It's just not going to be graphic or extreme.
Georgine Ferris is on the line. She's a sponsor of the Yes on Initiative 1109 campaign. She wants you to reject R90, which gets rid of the inappropriate sex education bill that the legislature passed despite overwhelming opposition from folks all across the state, including King County. And she wants you to say yes on Initiative 1109, which would get rid of the statewide control of this and instead leave it up to the local communities to come up with age-appropriate, common-sense sex education on their own. And beyond that, something that this also does that's incredibly important is it turns the lesson plan into an opt-in situation rather than an opt-out, mm-hmm. which essentially forces parents or forces the schools to let the parents know that they're even doing this.
Right. Can I readdress what you're asking? Will some schools not want to have it? Well, this requires local school districts to create.
Yes.
And programs for that are transparent and developmentally appropriate, and ones that can be shown on WTV, which 5395 cannot even be spoken of on TV because it's so graphic.
Yeah, so a basic, just like a bar is, can you put it on TV without putting an R rating on it or having to put some sort of message that says this is potentially inappropriate content for the ages of individuals who would be getting access to this in the classroom?
Yeah, it has to be on TV without a disclaimer.
Yeah.
And it's requiring all material available online for review. Anybody can mm-hmm. review it. So it promotes prevention, skill, and boundaries in relationships. So it is not saying, you know, take away all sex ed. It is saying there will be, but here is the common yeah. sense element to
it. And that's the most important part of all of this, because, again, even the state's own data, when they did a survey across the state, this wasn't even just done in King County, but across the state, everyone said, hey, we want common sense, reasonable information to be right. given to kids. But when we're talking about, for and in particular, K through third grade, the materials that are presented are just not appropriate. And I think Todd Herman has done a really good job highlighting why some of this stuff isn't appropriate. But I think anyone, regardless of their political views, can look at the curriculum that is going to be taught and say it goes a little bit too far. The only issue you're likely going to run into is that it could be confusing for voters who are being told no on R90, but yes on 1109. So do you have any general concerns? Because it kind of feels like it's really easy even to flip those two and say yes on R90, mm-hmm. no on 1109 unintentionally.
Right. Well, 1109 will not be on the ballot, but we do need 320,000 signatures by December 21st.
Yes, and so I mean in a general sense. Someone comes up to you and they're saying, you're going to support yes on 1109. You're like, oh, no, I'm not supposed to do that. I'm a yes on R90. Like, no, you got it mixed up.
I know. It's very confusing. A lot of people have said that to me. Explain it to me again. And I'm like, okay, I know it's confusing. But it's a 1-2 punch. Reject R90. It's defense. Please sign 1109. That is our offense. Because should it pass, should we all reject R90, then what's going to happen? It's going to roll back the law to what it was the day they signed it. And then what are we going to do? 1109 yeah. resets it. 1109 says come January when session begins, they can vote on this and say, we're pulling out the bad, offensive, graphic sex ed, and we're going to replace it with common sense sex ed.
So how do people who are listening right now, how do they get involved, not just to make sure that they're signing it, they have to find out where they can make the signatures, but also so that they can become their own activists in their own community and collect signatures?
Great. Go to our website, commonsensesexed@yahoo.com, or go to Facebook, Common Sense Sex Ed Initiative 1109. And those are some ways to get involved and get an initiative or just get some information. If you have any more questions or want to be involved, we'd love to have you. So we need 320,000 signatures by December 21st, and we'd like to get as many as we can by Halloween, just in case we go into a COVID lockdown. And we are going to be having drive-through signature gatherings again. We're going to be doing all kinds of things to be sure we get this out into the community mm-hmm. and get as many signatures as possible, because we believe this is important. We want to stand up for the children, the innocence of the children. We want to protect their childhood where they can. And again, it's common sense sex ed. It's
yep.
taking age-appropriate information into these little ones.
And you gave out the email address. The website is commonsensesexed.com to learn more information about this and how you can get your signature on the actual initiative so we can actually get it to where it needs to go. commonsensesexed.com.
Right.
The email is just @yahoo.com if you have any specific questions, but of course, commonsensesexed.com. Georgine Ferris, my friend, thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you, Jason. Really appreciate all you do.
Absolutely. I appreciate that. You're listening to The Jason Rand Show. When we come back, Republicans are starting to, yet again, amplify the message. We need a special legislative session to deal with some of the issues here in Washington State, regardless of what Governor Jay Inslee thinks of the situation. State Representative Jacqueline Maycumber from Republic is going to stop by with that. Welcome back to the Jason Rand Show. show on AM 770 KTTH, streaming on all those smart speakers like Amazon Echo and Google Home. Republicans continue to amplify the message that it is time for Governor Jay Inslee to call a special legislative session so they can figure out what needs to be done, as the state finds itself in a pretty significant financial hole as a result of the coronavirus, and frankly, the coronavirus mandates coming from this governor. One of the state lawmakers who has lended her voice to these calls is State Representative Jacqueline Maycumber. She, of course, represents Republic in the 7th District here in Washington, and she joins me on the line. Welcome back to the show.
Thank you for having me.
What's the biggest reason why we need a special legislative session now versus waiting until the session normally would start?
Well, when we talk about the next legislative session, that starts in January, but we don't finish up the budget till sometimes April. But if we go into a special session, it can be August or even longer in the past. So you're looking at projections into the budget of 21 to 22 sessions. So you're looking in a projection of the future. And a lot of this, we may be entering one of the greatest depressions in our history, or at least our generation, and we don't know what to look at until we can see and get in and look at the numbers. And if we don't start prioritizing today and really looking at what is the most important things that we need to take care of, we may be in big trouble when April and August come around.
So what would be the first thing that you guys would do as Republicans who don't have control of Olympia at this point if you were to get that special session?
Well, having the conversation on really how do we prioritize a state budget? If you remember right in 2018, after the election and the midterms, the majority party went in and increased spending 18%, mm-hmm. the highest in state history. And that was just a few months after the election. And, you know, continuous cries of there's going to be a rainy day. You can't spend it all. And unfortunately, that rainy day has come. So let's talk about prioritizing need. Let's talk about making sure that we take care of our most vulnerable in healthcare, that we take care of public safety, that we take care of education. And all of us just want to be safe. We really want to be safe with our health. We really want to be safe in our jobs. And we want to be safe in our communities when it comes to public safety. So having that conversation saying, okay, where should we prioritize your hard-earned dollars is an important conversation to have and not wait for the next year, fiscal year, to even look at it or address it.
Well, there's also, and I think the people have completely forgotten this, but we're going into the year with some additional increases in taxes that had been passed by Democrats before the pandemic, right? I mean, so going into 2022, you've got the employees will be hit with essentially a payroll tax, although it's not really, it's done on wages, 58% or 0.58% to go through that new financial assistance program for long-term care that the Democrats set up. We, of course, went into this year changing the tax structure for real estate. So now you've got these tiered systems, which I would argue at a time where the economy is doing really, really poorly, we shouldn't be hitting large construction projects with an insanely high tax versus what we used to have, which was that flat tax. It just doesn't seem like we are prepared to go into an economy that's dealing with a pandemic. And it seems like you guys can fix that. You just need to actually get back to work.
Absolutely. And have conversations. You know, the governor's really taken every single decision on his own. He has not communicated with the legislature. We haven't had any back and forth communication. And when you take on you take on the whole responsibility of every decision. And frankly, it's almost a magic eight ball of guidelines. We don't know, you know, what he's going to shake that eight ball and say the next time he has a press conference. And so you see this almost a suffering of crisis and confidence. And we're really, you know, we're in a health crisis, an economic crisis, and now a crisis in confidence of our government. We really need to get together and do what you elected us to do, and that is represent the people. Yeah. You elected us to represent the people. Let's make sure that we can continue to do our jobs.
State Representative Jacqueline Maycumber joining me on the line. She is the Republican from the City of Republic. We expect that your calls are going to be ignored by the governor. He has indicated, essentially, other Democrats have as well, that he's just waiting to see what kind of financial assistance he would be getting from the federal level, which is just such a cop-out, because no matter what you guys end up getting, it's not going to be enough to justify withholding some of the hard work that needs to get done. Obviously, we're in the middle of a political season as well. You know, Lauren Culp, chief of police from the City of Republic, is the challenger for Governor Jay Inslee. I thought he did a really, really good job at the debate, but we all need to be clear that the chances of him winning are still very slim, which is why it's so important for people to get out there making sure that they're reminding people that Lauren Culp is running. How much do you put into a potential win for Lauren Culp, who would very clearly change things for the better in Olympia?
Well, I am actually the chair of HROC for House Republican elections, so on the legislative side. So I have put a lot of energy to make sure that we pick up more seats. We were almost equal a few years ago, and we lost a few seats, and we went from, you know, a pretty balanced budget to 18% increase in spending and the largest in state history. I've been very focused on making sure we get more of a balance in government. When you have you know, a Democrat governor, Democrat majority in the House, and a Democrat majority in the Senate, there's really not a balance. And we want to make sure that everyone's voice is being heard and an equal level of voices. So really having balance to your government is helpful. So, yeah, I mean, making sure you get out and vote, making sure you get out and vote for governor is really important. Making sure you're voting for those legislative seats is super important. And then our local. I mean, we can really make a difference. And we've even seen what Seattle does with their local elected positions, that, you know, when you make sure that those positions represent your values.
Elections have consequences, and right now the state of Washington is dealing with those consequences. We could be doing a lot more if we had more Republicans in control, not just in the governor's office, but in the state races that are so incredibly important. So make sure you guys go out and vote. Again, we've been talking with State Representative Jacqueline Maycumber. Thank you so much for stopping by. I really appreciate it.
Thank you so much for having me, Jason.
Of course. You've been listening to The Jason Rant Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. Really, really do appreciate it. Coming up next, Ben Shapiro.